Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
Welcome to Monday's edition of the Three Martini Lunch. Now once again featuring Jim Garrity, who's back from his cruise throughout the Caribbean on the National Review cruise. Jim, welcome back.
Greg, it's good to be back. Coming back through Fort Lauderdale Airport, I got two bits of good news from the TSA. The first was that I was cleared to fly, and the second is that my prostate looks fantastic.
So did you actually have a run-in with them?
On the way over, both myself and Mrs. Campaign's spot were picked out for random selection. My guess is we're right next to each other in the line, so a husband and wife together seems like a very unusual, you know, random selection. But I guess, you know, I guess she's swarthy enough to be, if we had good old-fashioned profiling, I would understand it. And in my category, if the IRA starts blowing up bombs, then I realize, you know, pale guys named Garrity are going to be top of the line of the top of the list of suspects. But that's why this is just a slow motion disaster unfolding before us, because each day there's going to be some new, you know, unfathomable horror story.
Well, that's certainly true, and we had plenty of them last week. It was one of our bad and maybe even the crazy martini one of the days last week, but it's actually the good martini today in this. It appears that after a week of very real stories about people being very much violated, it appears that people on both sides of the aisle are starting to get it now. Here's Hillary Clinton in a kind of interesting commentary on CBS's Face the Nation on Sunday, responding to a question from moderator Bob Schieffer.
Would you submit to one of these pat-downs?
Not if I could avoid it. No, I mean, who would?
Well, as funny as that is for the Secretary of State.
Oh, Greg, thank goodness I'm not one of you peons. Thank goodness the taxpayers pay to fly me wherever I want without a security check. The infamous Hillary laugh returns.
So, obviously, this is going to be a major headache over the Thanksgiving vacation season here. But the question is, will the TSA and the Department of Homeland Security eventually relent here, or are we just stuck with this for the foreseeable future?
Okay, one way or another, they will relent. And the first Republican candidate who comes out and says, on day one, I will tell the TSA director, find some way to work around this so that we do not have to, you know, have TSA people putting their hands in people's private parts, we'll instantly get a quick surge. In fact, I think you'd be surprised to find any Republican candidate willing to defend this policy. I think we've now reached some sort of – there's always a little frustration with the – there's a shoe bomber, so you have to take off your shoes. There's a liquid bomber, so you're not allowed to bring any liquids on the plane. There's all kind of, you know, with each new act by the terrorists, some little bit of freedom or dignity gets taken away from absolutely everyone, even though 99.99999, and put on as many nines there as you need, people are not terrorists and are not trying to smuggle things into the plane. And I suppose we should have realized, you know, after the Christmas bombing attempt over Detroit, that sooner or later they're going to have to figure out ways to start looking towards the underwear. But Krauthammer's column that "Don't touch my junk" is the new "Don't tread on me" right, was this great observation. I want a government that doesn't treat me like a suspect and figures out a way to, you know, more practically apply the fact that not all terrorists look alike and not all to apply something closer to the Israeli standard, where you actually decide, hey, how is the person behaving? Is this person behaving like a terrorist? Instead of saying, hey, you know, let's check everybody's underwear.
Well, after that incredibly encouraging first martini, let's get on to the bad martini now. And that's that some of these recounts from congressional House races are still going on. Somehow, some way, Republican Joe Walsh actually won in suburban Chicago, despite many different allegations of Democratic chicanery there. So congratulations to him for beating the machine. But the story that's out today is that Randy Altschuler, the Republican nominee out in Long Island, New York, the first congressional district, after the initial count, he was behind. After the re-canvassing, he was ahead. And now it looks like he's behind again, although it's still very, very close. But it just seems to me, Jim, that except for a few exceptions here, it looks like any close race in the last few years is somehow the Democrats always find a way to win.
Yeah, and I should note that when the Republicans can win one in suburban Chicago, perhaps we shouldn't ask for any more. That's our small miracle of the cycle. In this case, it's only 15 votes. Apparently, there are still probably 1,000 absentees or contested ones to be sorted out. So by no means is this one over. What I was hearing from the Altschuler folks is kind of this fascinating example in which when you're behind, count every vote and any potential, you know, spoiled ballot or disputed ballot or anything that might conceivably be a vote should be counted, and nothing should be declared until we're absolutely certain that every last vote has been counted. Once you're ahead, as Bishop appears to be right now, look, it's time to settle this. It's time to get this thing over. It's time for the other guy to concede. It's time to get this done, by golly.
Time to move on.
So, you know, the degree in which, you know, candidates ridiculously flip on that is rather appalling. I think Altshuler has been pretty clear. He's like, look, count them, but we're confident of our lead. I hope this is on the up and up. New York is not terribly miles ahead of Illinois in this category of, you know, chicanery and odd things going on. They instituted a new electronic system across the state, and it sounds like, you know, in addition to this one, there's still a bunch of state legislative races waiting to be settled. So, unsurprisingly, New York state government failed that fairly basic duty of having a good system to count the votes.
I am never going to make fun of Eastern Europe or any other part of the world again who can't get their vote count done in a matter of days. I mean, it really should be the night of, but for whatever reason, we're almost 3 weeks out now, and we still don't know who won about a handful of races here. But we do know who lost one of the races, and that's our third martini today. Your favorite, Alan Grayson, crushed in his reelection bid in Florida's 8th Congressional District. Not surprisingly, he is not going down quietly. So as this debate plays out in the House of Representatives over whether to extend some or all of the Bush tax cuts, you've got Alan Grayson going on the floor with his analogies. He had a whole series of them about what the rich people might do with the ongoing tax cuts that they would get if their tax bracket were extended. Here's just one of his analogies.
They can buy 800 cigars. Think about that. That's one for the morning and one for the evening. 800 luxury cigars, and then they can light each one of those cigars with a $100 bill.
Oh, but he's not done yet. Here's his explanation of what the Democrats want to do and what the Republicans really want to do.
They'll spend it on restaurants in their neighborhood. They'll spend it on getting their hair cut. They'll spend it on their credit card payments. They'll spend it on the things they need to do to stay alive. Instead of the alternative, the Republican-favored alternative, which is to have them lose their job, keep unemployed, and move into their cars.
So there you go, Jim. Basically, the argument Republicans want to kill you extends beyond Election Day. That's a new wrinkle.
Greg, you know, I really don't want Alan Grayson to go away angry. I just want him to go away. It's interesting that as he goes, first of all, apparently rich people don't pay credit cards. They don't buy, they don't get haircuts, they don't eat out in restaurants. They don't do any of these. And as he's saying, you know, they'll spend it on luxury cigars. Well, if you're a luxury cigar dealer, that sounds fantastic. That sounds like a great economic stimulus program. It's rather fascinating that this perception that in Grayson's mind that only middle-class people spend money, rich people do not, and that not only that, only middle-class people spend money in ways that is economically stimulative. Somehow no one makes a living from catering to the luxury market. This man apparently is in Florida, and I was in Florida, and there were plenty of jewelry stores I saw down there, plenty of high-end car dealerships and all those things. So I'm really kind of surprised this notion that this would be I shouldn't be surprised by Alan Grayson, but it just kind of shows that this isn't about economics. This isn't about how do we really help the economy. It's mostly about rich people are bad, and we must do everything we can to beat them with sticks, or at the very least subject them to endless droning Alan Grayson speeches.
Yeah, class warfare is still right on the front burner there. I think it was Paul Ryan who said that over the weekend, that's still the Obama administration's calling card, and I guess we'll see that for at least the next 2 years. Jim, welcome back. We'll talk to you tomorrow.
Looking forward to it, Greg.
Jim Garrity of NationalReview.com. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Join us Tuesday for the 3 Martini Lunch.